Welcome to Afros in the Diaspora. My name is Sarah. I am your host, and together we will vent, rant, laugh, and cry as we discuss the highs and lows of being an immigrant. Stay tuned for stories that will inspire, inform, entertain, and give hope. This is Afros in the Diaspora. Welcome, welcome, welcome back to another episode of Afros in the Diaspora. And today we have the one and only Misha Maseka, the musician, the singer, the writer, the director, producer, CEO, Village Girls Limited, like all the things. Misha, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Hello, everyone. Hello, listeners.
Yeah, this is so cool. Thank you for making the time. We're making it happen. I'm just so excited to have you on the podcast.
Honestly, I'm excited to be here.
Yes.
Hi. Hi. Hi, friend.
Hi, friend. Yeah, so let's jump into our icebreakers. I'm trying to mix it up today with the icebreakers. So you're Zambian, so I'll ask you a couple trivia about Zambia, and then I'll just throw like random riddles at you.
Okay.
Yeah, because you have that creative mind, so I'm sure you got answers lined up.
Yes.
Without even knowing the question, you're just like ready, good.
Yes. Let's go. And if the creativity fails me, my lack of shame will save me, because I don't mind feeling and looking stupid.
Same. Awesome. Let's go for it. Okay. So what is the capital city of Zambia?
Lusaka.
Lusaka.
Wow. The way that I was like, wait, is it Lusaka or is it Livingston? It's Lusaka.
It's Lusaka. Oh. Official language of Zambia?
I don't know. Oh, English? Bemba? Like, I know Bemba is widely spoken in the capital, but...
Yeah, English, but the official language is...
I think it's English because colonization.
English. Perfect, okay. Perfect reason, you know, logic for the answer. It's English.
Jolly old England.
Yeah, jolly old. When did Zambia become a republic?
1964.
Okay. And
October 7th, 1964, October something.
You know, I have just the year here, but I think I heard that it was October 24th.
Okay, I knew. I was like, it's somewhere in October because, Independence Day.
Just a moment. Let me check that, actually.
It's like October. Yeah, it's in October.
Yeah, it's October 24th. How do I know this?
Wow.
How?
She's an intellectual, everybody.
She's an intellectual. I think I've just interviewed a lot of Zambians and asked them that question.
Okay, purr.
What's the currency used in Zambia?
Kwacha. In US dollars, Kwacha. Yep.
And what is Zambia's calling code?
Calling code?
Yeah.
+44?
No.
7700006. That's zero. You know what? I don't look at numbers when I talk to my cousins, okay? We just be talking on WhatsApp.
+260.
+260. And you know what's so crazy? I literally have a Zambian number because when I was there last time, you know, I like got a SIM card because we were there for a while.
Yeah.
Dang, +26. Well, I will never forget.
+260.
Never forget.
Okay. On what side do people drive in Zambia?
On the British side.
What side is that?
Is that the left side? I can't even think of it. Yeah, it's the British side. Whatever the British side is, the opposite side of the American side.
No, it's the left. It's the left.
Yeah.
No, the British drive on the right, don't they?
No, baby, they drive on the opposite side of how we drive in Canada.
Yeah, so that's the right side.
Yeah.
Because we're on the left, like the driver's seat is on the left side of the car.
No, the Zambians drive on the British side.
No, it's left. According to this website.
They're lying to you. They're like, Lusaka.
Oh no. You're right, actually. They drive on the left side of the road but sit on the right side. You're right.
Yes.
See, I almost messed it up. My apologies.
You messed up.
What was Zambia's former name before its independence?
Northern Rhodesia. Shout out to that white devil, Cecil Rhodes.
Oh, white devil.
Shout out to that evil guy. I don't think that's a controversial. I think everybody can agree that Cecil Rhodes indeed is, I am sure, somewhere not very nice now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so who were the first inhabitants of Zambia?
Who were the first inhabitants? Black people? I don't know.
Of course, black people. Like,
I'm like Bantu tribes.
Like, they? Do you want options? I can give you options for this.
Oh, one. I mean, okay. I can. From what I know, and you know, forgive me, father, for not paying attention when you were teaching me this stuff, and also my mom being like a geography teacher.
Oh,
like the Luba Kingdom, which kind of started in Western Congo, if I'm not mistaken. So I think like that trickling down is maybe how the migration happened, but I could be spreading misinformation. So please, history.
No, it's not the Lubas. It's the, and I don't think I'm saying this correctly, so forgive me. It's the Khoisans.
Okay.
Yeah, so
they migrated up.
Yeah, they historically lived in South Africa, which used to include, I guess, present day Zambia, and you know, time passed and regions were divided and all the things.
Okay, interesting. So then they probably were pushed down further, because a lot of us, like, and where I'm from, so I'm learning too, but like where I'm from is the Northwest. And it feels a lot more like you can really tell sort of the Congolese influence and Angolan influence of things from like where my tribe is from. Like it feels a lot more Central African than Southern. But that's interesting.
Okay. All right. We're going to move into the riddles that I'm just going to rapid fire at you.
We love a riddle.
Okay. I feel like they're pretty simple. So, I mean, okay. You know, it'll be great. All right. First one. Take away my first letter and I still sound the same. Take away my last letter and I still sound the same. Take away the letter in the middle and I still sound the same. I'm a 5-letter word. What am I?
So take away the first letter, I still found the same. Second, or you said the last one?
The first letter, take away the first letter, still sound the same. Take away the last letter, still sound the same. Take away the middle letter, still sound the same.
And you're a five-letter
word. So if you take away this, this, and this, still
sound the same. God, Father God. Wow, I'm assuming it's like a, okay, so it would have to be a one-syllable word.
Mm-mm.
I still sound the same?
Mm-hmm.
Take away the first.
Still pronounced the same. Yeah.
Pronounced the same. So it's not like
not the really
the music?
No, it's not music.
Because I'm like, you know, like music always sounds, I don't know. I'm trying to think of. Oh, that one's hard. Wait a minute. I'm determined to get this because I'm like.
Would you like a hint?
Sure.
Opposite of full.
Empty.
Empty.
Empty. Good one.
Yeah. Empty.
That's a good one.
What has hands but cannot clap?
What has hands but cannot clap?
Nope.
Babies. No. well, they can't. They really can't. They're so cute.
It's a non-living thing, though. Let's say that.
The hands of a watch.
Yeah, clock. That's true.
Clock. Yeah.
Okay, correct. What is something you can throw but not catch? No, you can catch but not throw. I mixed that up. What can
fish.
You catch but not throw? You can throw a fish back in the water.
I guess. fish, you can. What is something you can catch but can't throw? A cold. Yeah.
A cold. Yeah, that's the answer.
Oh, but you can throw a cold to someone else. You know what I'm saying?
Madame. Misha. Not throw it. Okay. What is so delicate that saying its name breaks it?
Breaking a name, to break a name. Something that's so delicate that saying its name breaks it. A curse. No. I'm just thinking about breaking a name. How do you break a name?
It's something that is so sensitive that even saying the name of it breaks it. Hey. So
delicate that it breaks it. I mean, I'm thinking of glass, but that's not it. Like, mm-hmm. Delicate but breaks it. Mm-hmm. Wow, I think I'm stumped. Hold on. Hold on. Yo, I am flabbergasted. I am flabberflasted.
Would you like the answer?
Yeah, that one, for some reason, I can't.
Silence.
Oh, breaking silence. Yes, of course.
Okay, let me ask you one final one. I mean, this one is straightforward-ish, right? What has one eye but cannot see?
What has one eye but cannot see? I, like, know this one because I've heard it, but for some reason my mind is blank, yo. Wait, what has one eye but cannot see?
One eye right in the center of its skinny ass head.
But cannot see. One eye but cannot see. So many things.
Okay, name one.
Sharks can't see very well, can they? I don't know.
Sharks have two eyes.
How do you know that? Have you ever seen a shark in real life?
Not in real life.
They always be just showing us on Shark Week, but have you ever seen one in real life? No.
That is a wild conspiracy.
I literally know this one, but for some reason, this one is also like adore people.
I mean,
no, I know this one. I literally know this one. A needle.
Yeah. A needle.
I knew that it was somewhere in my mind, and I was like, let me just stall.
let's scrape around in there. Yeah, that's it.
Eye of a needle, yes.
Eye of a needle. Perfect. Thank you for engaging in those.
Those are so fun. I love those.
Yeah, right? Yeah, and they kind of wake you up. You're like, okay, now you're ready to go.
All the wordplay. It's like, you need to really have a good handle on, like, the English language, because I wonder if riddles like this work in other languages, because a lot of these phrases are very, like, English.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I don't know. I could be making that up, but I'm like, do they call it the eye of a needle in French too, but just, like, French words? I wonder. These are the things that I wonder. Catch me wondering more on my podcast, and I wonder.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah. And I wonder on the podcast. Hell yeah. It's on YouTube, y'all. Go check it out. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Okay, let's get into the meat of our conversation today. And let's just start, Misha, with you telling us a little bit about your story, your immigration story to Canada, from Zambia, and how, you know, you have settled here.
Okay, well, jumping straight into it, I mean, first spoiler alert is I was not born in Zambia. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, dun, dun,
I was
dun.
Born to Zambian parents, but upon my birth, I touched this earth, met this earth in a country formerly known as Swaziland, which is now currently Eswatini. It's the only absolute monarchy in Africa. It's the last absolute monarchy in Africa. It's crazy, though. Like, there needs to be more research and stuff about Eswatini just in general, because there's a lot of, like, incredible things that happen in that kingdom, and then a lot of, like, messed up things. But yeah, no, I was born in the beautiful country of Eswatini. And then when I was two, apartheid ended in South Africa. So then we moved to Mpumalanga. And I grew up in Shongwe up until I was nine. And then we moved to Australia. And then at 12, we moved to Canada. Before, by the time I was 12, I had already lived in four countries on three different continents. And I mean, what's interesting about, like, in terms of, like, Zambian-ness, like, we're pretty like, we're still quite connected to our Zambian culture in the way that I think a lot of immigrants are wherever you are. Like, I've always existed as an immigrant, right? Like, even when I was born, Swazi people are extremely, or Swati people rather, are extremely like, sort of, nationalistic is not the word, but they're kind of like, if you're not Swazi, we ain't giving you citizenship, right? So like, on my birth, I had Zambian citizenship. Yeah, because they were like, you're not from here, even though you're in this country. It's very Italian. You know how like Italians like do not grant, basically unless you're white, but like they don't grant, you know, people who are born, your family, like as an African could have been in Italy for like three generations, but like it's touch and go, like whether they'll give you citizenship or not. Really? Swaziland in the 90s worked like that. I don't know if it still works like that, but it definitely was like, if you're born here, that doesn't mean you're from here.
Right.
You can have the passport of your own country. So I was born Zambian, but I was not born within the borders of Zambia necessarily.
Oh, I see.
But yeah, so that was sort of, that's my immigration story, in that I've like, I was born an immigrant. I've always sort of like lived life through the lens of like straddling two different worlds, in the way that even in South Africa, like we were obviously considered foreign because though we are Africans, we were in a completely different country than our native heritage and culture. So existing even within the many cultures in South Africa still felt a little bit unique because we weren't Zulu or Xhosa or Ndebele, like we were Zambian, and they're like, you don't even speak any of our dialects, like we're not Afrikaans, or, you know. Yeah. So that was interesting. And then obviously Australia was like a culture shock in some ways, and that was a whole adjustment period, and then transitioning into Canada as well, which you feel, obviously there's a lot of immigrants in Canada, but there's not a lot of Zambians. Like, Zambians are unique in the way that there's not many of us. We do not exist outside of Zambia, or so it seems like. So yeah, it's been interesting sort of like navigating. And I'm always so excited when I meet another Zambian, like outside of Zambia. Like, I'm like, we don't exist. We're unicorns. This is so fun, especially within the arts.
Right.
Because I'm an artist. So that's immigrant, the Sparks Note version of my story.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And so, because you talked about being born an immigrant and existing as an immigrant in just in your body. And so how would you say that you have preserved that? Because not even being born on the soil of the country, like how would you say that you connect back home and even with your family? Because y'all have lived in so many different cultures and societies, and I'm sure all of those places have had their own influences and impact on you and, you know, your worldview and perspective. So how would you say that you preserve your Zambian-ness, your unicorn-ness, right? In the world and in your art and storytelling, how would you say that you embody that?
Yeah, totally. I think like the first and foremost, it comes down to like my parents, and like I credit my mom in the way that there's so many things, my mom and my dad both, like there's so many things about them that are so stereotypically Zambian and will forever be like that. You know, it's just like, it is what it is, what it is, what it is. Like in some ways they're pioneers and so progressive in the way that like, what's really cool about quote unquote immigrant parents, just in general, especially African immigrant parents, I credit the level of adaptability that so many of these Africans who move sometimes in their 30s, in their 40s, in their 50s to a completely different culture and sort of forge the way for their children. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, right? Because I think sometimes as children of immigrants or immigrants yourselves, but you were brought to a different country as like teenagers or kids, you kind of roll your eyes at your parents being like, oh, they're so like fish out of water and like goofy because they still have very thick accents and they refuse to assimilate and all of this stuff. But there's something that's like quite magical, strong, and incredibly like, what is the word that I'm looking for? Like adaptable, yes, but it's like it's a, it's a word that like means more than that, in the way that like their adeptness for assimilation is like astounding, right? Because how many people are moving countries in their 40s, learning a completely new language, accepting the cultures and customs of like places? So anyway, all that to say, because I can literally rant on that forever, is that I love my parents. Shout out to my parents in the way that they have done an incredible job at holding on to essential positive things about Zambian culture and instilling that in us, you know, through even just like my mom's like isms and like phrases are still very Zambian, and like half of them aren't even in English, right? And it's something that's so specific to my family and even like my tribe, which is also like a smaller tribe within the context of Zambia. Like, we're not like popular Bembas or Tongas, like we're at Kaonde. And some, like, if you're Kaonde, you basically need to come from Kaonde land, which is the northwestern province, but like no one else speaks Kaonde. So just like things like that, where I credit my parents to the way that they really kept the essentials like within the home and encouraged us also to assimilate and sort of like present in a way where it's just like you are in this culture, so like present as such. But also at home, there were so many things that we would code switch back into like a more Zambian way of living and even just like cooking, right? Like cooking traditional food. And still to this day, my mom will like drive 2 hours to bring my brother, my married brother with two kids, you know, in Shima, because his wife's Canadian, you know, to bring my brother in Shima, which is, I guess, like fufu, like with the, is West African, Sadza, Zimbabweans, Pop, South South Africans. What would East Africans call it?
Girl, I don't know.
What is it called in East Africa? Not Sadza. Anyway, but yeah. So that's how we keep it on, through food, through like phrases, through the values, like, you know, that are instilled. Yeah.
Yeah. And I relate with that because I didn't move here with my parents. I moved by myself. And then, you know, my brothers, we kind of ended up in the same city. The food is such a very strong way for me personally, because I've said this before and people think I'm kidding. Like, whenever I have to travel for work and I don't have access to pounded yam or fufu or like jollof rice or one of my Nigerian dishes, there's just this pain in my back that I can't get rid of. Like, I feel it in my body. Like, truly, I feel it in my body when I'm not able to eat the food that like just makes me feel at home and happy. And and I feel like even though I've lived here for years now, like, Nigerian food is all I eat for the most part, right? But yes, food is such a very, very strong way. The music, even on social media, just following accounts that talk about, like, you know, what's happening back home, the humor, the comedy, the skits, you know?
That's definitely another way. I think in adulthood, because you also asked about, like, work and sort of creativity in my storytelling. I would say as I got older, right, like, there's that time when, especially when you've sort of moved out of home or just you're operating more independently, like as a kid. So it's not a thing of like, I can't rely on my parents to feed me everything about my culture. Like, I myself have to make the choices to be finding stuff out for myself. Like, unless I'm living there, like, how am I staying connected? So yeah, like there was a whole, you know, like, period of time where I was just like avidly looking for like podcasts, like influencers, like just needing to sort of like touch ground and touch base in Zambia and sort of keeping my finger on the pulse of like what is happening actually on the ground and on the continent. And it's nice that like now I have like Zambian friends that like live on the continent as well as like outside, sort of all over the world. And that's been a really, really great way to stay connected, because like even just like recently I was in London and we've been internet friends for like the Zambian girl Shout out to you, Natasha. We've been internet friends for a couple of years, but it was the first time that we actually linked up in person, and she lives in London. She's a musician. She's amazing. And it was just like like we were sort of just like talking. And then I made like a very culturally specific joke and she instantly lit up. And I'm like, right, because like this is a universal experience of like having Zambian parents. So that was like, that's been really cool to like just stay connected to just people that even like grew up similarly to me.
Yeah.
And then like the way that it is in my art, it informs everything in my art. The stories that I want to tell like are predominantly Zambian stories where, you know, coming from women that might have lived lives that were more similar to mine or lives that were more similar to like my aunties or grandmothers, great grandmothers. Like there's just like a wealth of stories, especially like female forward stories that I'm like, I must and will tell all of these until the day that I die. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's sort of like my, it's my North Star. It's kind of been a bit of like a compass in the last couple of years where I'm like, I feel very locked into the kind of work that I'm drawn to. And it's all kind of focused in and around Zambia. So yeah.
Yeah, bringing Zambia to the world.
Come on, Zambia Kuchelo is how you say it. Zambia Kuchelo.
Kuchelo?
Means to the world, yeah, yeah.
Oh, really? Zambia Kuchelo, then. Yeah, that is amazing. So how would you talk about your experience of Blackness in these different spaces that you've lived in, right? Mm. From, you know, being in Africa, Swaziland, where you were born, to mm-hmm. South Africa, to, like, Australia, Canada. Like, how would you say that you have navigated being Black and being a Black person versus witnessing Blackness around you versus yeah. how the, you know, different societies view Blackness, and how have you been able to navigate that?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, I'd like to say that I'm very thankful that I grew up in Africa. And I don't say that flippantly. I'm laughing just because of sort of like the construct and notion of race, like we all know as Black bodies, is like quite absurd, right? Like mm-hmm. on this end of like the racial spectrum, it's absurd. Like race in general is just something that I'm like, even in the most horrific interactions, like it's just absurd. Like it's a very absurd thing for people to continue to have like conflict over mm-hmm. race. I'm not talking about culture. I'm literally talking about the way that we phenotypically look, right? Mm-hmm. And the way that our hair grows out of our head and the shapes of our noses and the bigness or smallness of our lips. Like it's a very absurd thing to be like, this is the thing that we have decided to be hung up on systemically mm-hmm. as well as socially. I'm like, you guys, everybody's crazy. So that being said, so that's the disclaimer, but that being said, like the navigation of Blackness, my navigation, I became Black at the age of 12 when I moved outside of Africa, right?
Yep,
before then,
yep.
I was the majority. My general understanding of like, even though there was still, we grew up very multicultural, the emphasis on race wasn't necessarily the thing, right? In South Africa, it is in some ways because South Africa's racial history and the way it has expressed itself and presented feels similar to that of like American chattel enslavement of African bodies. Like mm-hmm. so there's a lot of similarities and like with Brazil as well, yeah. But still it's something, I think there's more of a class separation because I grew up around poor Africans, rich Africans, middle-class Africans. I myself grew up upper middle class. Like, so it's one of those things where racially, that wasn't the division. It was like culturally, oh, what language do you speak, right? Looking at another Black person and being like, I don't understand what you're saying, dog. Because mm-hmm. yeah. you are speaking Zulu and you only know Zulu and Afrikaans. You don't even know English. And I only know English. And then they're like, why do you only know English? You're Black? Like, and then I'm like, but I'm from my country was colonized, and my yeah. parents didn't want us to speak because we don't even live there. Like, you know, like all of these things. So For a while, like, I wasn't navigating race until, like, yeah, my early teens. And then it was a thing of, now I'm in Canada and I'm a Black body, and the way people are relating to me is through the lens of what they're seeing on TV, which was mostly American. So then there's this whole other layer where you're like, what is going on? Why are people relating to me as if I have the same experience as Brandy, you know? And in some ways, yes. But then in other ways, I'm like, I don't know. Huh? What's going on? Like, so then you're navigating that on top of being a teenager who already has, like, puberty and identity issues. And you're kind of like, what is going on? Mm-hmm. And yeah, so in adulthood, because this is a long-winded answer, you know, this is one of my favorite topics. Like, in adulthood, and even also within, me and my siblings were pretty with it because we were the new kids a lot. So, like, we got pretty good at a very young age at, like, sussing out social dynamics, hierarchies, like, without even really speaking. I think we were quite, like, good at being like, okay, we can suss out the vibes and the dynamics, and, like, recognizing kind of the way people would microaggress us, like, just because of the assumptions of who we were, like, everywhere, right? Like, not just in Canada, also in Australia, also in South Africa, anytime that we were in Europe visiting cousins or whatever it is, right? Like, it's just like, we could kind of tell, it's like, you're assuming random things, right? Like, now I have an accent. So when I go to Europe, because my accent is North American, there, but to other Black people in Europe, right, my accent is North American, so now they're assuming something about maybe the level of my intelligence or awareness because of my accent, not necessarily because of the color of my skin. So anyway, I could literally go on forever and ever and ever, and I'm being tangential, but overall, it's for me, I've always, like, I've always felt like I've been having an outer body experience as a Black body in this world. Because existing in sort of, like, so many countries and cultures, it's not just one thing. People want to hitch their bandwagon of Blackness to America a lot of the times. And I'm just like, that literally doesn't make sense, because there's literally a billion Black people everywhere, yeah, on every continent.
Yeah.
Maybe not Antarctica, because we don't like the cold, but, like, you know, and then the Blackness of, like, being African and what that means. And, you know, like, we've talked about it, like, you know, just as, like, friends, like, this thing of, like, what does it even mean to be, like, African, and the world's, like, version of what African is because of, you know, the West African influence and the Black Panther of it all.
The
Black Panther of it all.
Wakanda of it all.
They made up Wakanda and Zamunda of it all.
Yeah.
And just even that, like, notion where I'm like, again, can't relate. Like, love that for all of us. Mm-hmm. Love it. We love $1 billion, like, going towards, like, Black bodies. And then also I'm like, this is not this is not real life for me, right? Like,
yeah,
the assumptions of, oh, you're African, which means you're West African. And I'm like, no, dog.
Is that a real thing someone said to you?
No, but, you know, sort of like they think that they understand culturally maybe where you're coming from when they're like, oh, you're from Africa? Jollof rice. Am I right? And I'm like, cook with rice where I come from. Do you know, like, because the most visible version, they're like, okay, we have the African-American version, now we have the West African version. We know what Blackness is. There's two versions. And it's like, no, there's actually more than that.
Like, a billion. Yeah, yeah. I totally hear that. And
yeah,
to what you said earlier about, like, how language and accent plays a role in people's assumptions, yeah. Oh, yeah. And how people's perspective on you and where you're coming from in the different, you know, geographical locations you've lived in. In Canada, I know that when I first moved here, I mean, my accent is a little bit more Canadian now.
You said, let me say.
But my accent when I first came here was like this. I was just trying to work on it a little bit, so it was not quite as rough and sharp as this. But then, like, you'd the assumptions from other people here, especially for new immigrants, people who just moved out of Africa, who still have their very strong African accent, wherever they may be from, the different accents.
Yes.
Right? And people just feel the need to like question folks' intelligence.
The moment yes.
you're not, you're, the moment your accent is not like this, you know, the moment you're not speaking in the Canadian, in the American,
yeah.
you know, like it just, people then talk to you like you're stupid in a way and just kind of have a uh-huh. weird perception or attitude mm-hmm. when you're talking. And just, you can see it in the body language. You can see it in the looks. You can see it in the whispers
it's
or whatever.
So insane. Because yeah. like, when you really think about it, this person already has more intelligence and brain capacity as most people, because they can speak more than one language.
Yeah.
Like the fact that like the first thing is like, oh, this person ended this accent trying to communicate in my native tongue. I'm sorry, Jonathan, do you speak another language?
And it's our native tongue. Like,
yeah, like
colonize all of us.
Like, can you imagine? Like, it is unfathomable. That's what I'm saying. Like, race is absurd, right?
Yeah.
It's unfathomable. Or yeah, like the construct is absurd, because it's unfathomable that like, how dare so many people be like, you know, even the correction of like, oh, like I remember first moving to Canada too. And this isn't even like a like I'm mad at this, but again, absurdity. Like it's funny yeah. to think about where my accent was Australian. Like I sounded like a full-blooded Hemsworth brother when I moved here, and sounded like friggin' Chris Hemsworth. And it was interesting because obviously like not, okay, so not only is the new girl black, right? Like fully black, like we've seen on TV.
Right.
Black. You know, we've never been this close to someone this dark, and she's Australian. This is crazy. And I just remember them asking me to say certain words, like my classmates, right? Like asking me to say certain words and then like correcting me on the pronunciation of words. Cause they're like, well, you say it weird. Like it's actually said like this. And I'm like, this is, and even in my little 12-year-old mind, having been moving through the world so many different times with so many different cultures around me growing up, I again, the outer body experience mm-hmm. thing was happening where I'm like, this is very weird mm-hmm. and I will need to perform assimilation right now so that I don't die, because I'm 12
right.
and I you know, I don't die in terms of socially. I'm like, I
yeah,
need
yeah.
to, so I know that I need to like
yeah.
play into this, but like
yeah.
absurd, right? Like
yeah.
the accent thing, it's very, very absurd.
It is. And I like, it would, as much as I can claim that I have Canadian accent, when I'm tired, bro, it's a mixture of Lagos yeah. and Calgary and
yeah.
my village. And you just are going to have to deal with whatever I'm saying and however I'm saying it. If it's English, you hear what I'm saying, let's just
100%.
Move on.
It's like,
you know,
am I not speaking English? Do you not understand me? Then what,
yeah.
what qualms do you have? Like, truly,
yeah.
like,
what is the issue?
Yourself? Yeah. What's the,
yeah.
What's the, you
and
know?
Also like the disconnect between like the British English that most of Africa like
mm-hmm.
speaks and writes in and under
mm-hmm.
like understands with pronunciations and
mm-hmm.
and stress
where
the stress is
English.
in the syllables and like all that stuff
yeah.
And some words that are just not used in the American English
mm-hmm.
Language. And even moving here, that was a little bit of an issue, because I moved as a student, right? So writing papers and writing essays and doing assignments and, you know, doing presentations and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that, I would just always have those moments where my supervisor or my teacher or whoever in the class it would be would just be like, well, what do you mean? what are you trying to say? I'm like, testing. I think I'm speaking English. What do you mean, right?
You're like, what do you mean? Where
yeah.
did you study? Clearly not at an English institution.
Right? I remember the one time I was super late to, I don't remember what it was, but I just remember using, like, saying, oh, is this a queue? There was
yeah.
a lineup, and I'm like, hey, is this a queue?
Yeah.
To the person just, like, in front of me on the queue, I guess. And they're like, what is a queue? What do you mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, is this a queue? Like, are you guys queuing up for this?
Mm.
And they're like, what do you mean? That's not a word. And I'm like a line. Is this a line? Like, are you lying? Like, they're like, oh yeah, you could have just said that. It's a line. I'm like, oh, my, you're my like, bad. You know, like, just, I have a, like, so many moments like that of just like figuring out, like, where do I fit? I thought we all speak English, but I guess it's not the same. And you know, so yeah, let's talk about your artistry. Let's talk about Village Girls. Let's talk about
let's talk about it.
You know, like, what inspired you to create Village Girls, and what does Village Girls stand for? Like, why did you choose that name? What does it mean to you?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, like, how the Village Girl sort of, like, so we're a production house that focuses on telling female-led stories of the global South. And predominantly the way I like to work is in front and behind the camera, or on stage and behind the scenes. It's predominantly artists and technicians that are females, that are women of color. That doesn't mean that I don't like to work with men. Shout out to, you know, Anthony Onwardi, one of the best in the biz. And, you know, Colin Carbonara, like, there's, like, you know, frequent collaborators of ours that are Village Girls too, you know, in the male form. So we love them. But yeah, like, I think Village Girls, like, initially kind of started out quite organically. Like, I'm a girls girl through and through, like, all throughout high school, university, like, always just, like, fully, like, with the girls. Like, I did have guy friends, but, like, I am someone who just likes to kiki and haha with the girls and the gays, okay? And, yeah, like, a lot of, like, socially, that's sort of the energy that I pull. And I wouldn't even necessarily call myself hyper feminine. I think I have a more masculine energy, like, personality wise anyway. But and what does that even mean?
Right? I was gonna say,
I know, like, well, honestly, if we get into the gender breakdown of it all, like, that, but you know, in the Western context, I would say that, like, I'm not necessarily hyper feminine. I wouldn't consider myself, like, a girly girl, even though I am a girl's girl, if that makes sense. So socially, like, that's sort of how I've always been. So then creatively, as I was, like, finding myself through my 20s, working with women, writing with women, playing sort of, like, in the creative space with, like, a lot of my, like, girlfriends and making things, like, I grew up singing in trios with, like, two other girls. And then university, I was in a folk band, and it was, like, just girls. I went on tour across Canada twice on this, like, all women led sort of, like, campaign, you know, so that's a lot of just, like, my work and creativity has been centered around that. Basically, the actual idea for the production company came out of, like, two things: a necessity to actually create opportunities for myself, because, you know, the reality of being a Black female body in the West in the creative arts is the ghetto. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, it's amazing and it's great over here. And if reincarnation is a thing and I need to come back in this life, I would come back a Black woman every single time.
Heck, okay. Yeah.
Because we know where it's at.
Heck yeah.
However, comma, yet, and still.
Yeah.
The opportunities for us are few and far between when it comes to sort of trying to get into the institutions. And I've been extremely fortunate, but it comes in waves. It's a trend. We know it's this weird thing where they're like, yeah, we want you for Black History Month, and then we're not going to hire anytime after the month of February. So I'm kind of like, okay, well, shoot. So it was sort of like realizing the reality of that and being like, I need to start to make things for myself and produce things for myself. And that's how Village Girls was born. Kind of after the success of my first really successful short film, Not That Deep, which was 80% written, directed, produced, choreographed by women. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of like how we've continue to expand. And it's been like a really beautiful, extremely challenging, extremely humbling time, like being a founder and a director of your own company. Wow, I learn a new lesson that sits me right on my behind every single project. Like from project to project, I'm really learning things about myself and how to lead well and how to show up for my people and my team or the teams that I work with. So I don't even remember the question because I talked to you that much.
What inspired the name? Like, what is Village
Girl? Oh, yes, yes, yes. We are getting
well, thank you. No, no, thank you. Thank you, though. That has been so insightful to learn.
Village Girls. Yeah, I think like just the concept of a village and what that means to me is something that in my memory as a kid, going to the village or going to my visit my grandma, like in her home, like village represents family to me. Village represents like a safety. Village represents a warmth of story. Village represents innovation. And then like this sense of like sustainability. And I don't even mean it in sort of the weird, in like the trendy kind of like hashtag sustainability, but just really this thing of like taking what is sufficient, like almost like this like holistic full circle feedback loop of like, we are taking as much as we're giving and it all benefits us. Like the concept of Ubuntu, which is like an African philosophy of like, I am me because you are you kind of thing. So like when I think of the village and also being like a small town girl, like everywhere I've lived except for like in my adulthood has been small towns or like villages essentially. Like I was born in a capital, but we were like living in a smaller area. And then when we moved to South Africa, we went to like a tiny, tiny community for my dad to work at. And then Australia, like my dad is a doctor, and we went to the first community that we were in was like a predominantly indigenous community where you would have to like fly in by bush plane. So like the concept of village has also been just like a through line in my life. And I think that there's something that is so significant about like the simplicity and smallness of village life. And so it's every part of me. And when it comes to sort of the pillars of what it is that I like to interrogate in my work, like a village has all of that. It has everything. So
yeah. Ooh. You know, fun fact, this podcast was almost named Ubuntu.
Really?
Yeah.
We love the concept of Ubuntu.
Yeah, it's just such a beautiful. And then you don't, like, let me speak for myself. I don't always hear a lot about African philosophies.
Come on.
Like, you hear about ways of life. You hear about cultures, myths, legends, like history. But you see that term philosophy is not really something that's ascribed to a lot of the cultural,
like, practices.
Yes, practices and truths, I guess, and just cultural anchors of these of communities, you know, but they're never usually referred to as philosophies, right? Yep. When you hear philosophy, you think about the Greek and the Romans and the,
but right there,
it's the exact same thing. It is the exact same thing. It's a way of being. It's a way of living. And I am me because you are you. And what was really something that's a big part of what this podcast is we like, especially outside of the continent, right? Like we're here. And we all play a role, and if we can all impact and inspire and share with each other in this isolating, chaotic world that we find ourselves in, like, you know, there's beauty in that. So thank you for sharing about, the Village Girl philosophy. And I mean, 'cause it is a philosophy, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's just incredibly amazing.
Another concept, like a thing that my friends say a lot, like of the time about me, and also like I say to them, is also this concept of like, if I'm eating, the whole village is eating. That's like something that I hopefully, and like in a lot of ways I fail upwards with it, but that is like my number one thing that I keep on coming back to, is that like as I am fed in this life creatively, financially, all of these things, how can I continue to creatively and financially also feed like my team, my peers, my colleagues, the people that I work with, my collaborators. So yeah. That's like another really big thing about Village Girls and a thing that I want to continue to try and build and scale and model is this like notion of like, guys, we all get to come to the table and eat and feast every single time.
I think that's wonderful. I think I as a producer and a, like an artist in my own lane, I think I follow that in a way where it's like I want to create opportunities for others to shine. So like that's why I really like enjoy writing and producing and creating and just like, hey, would you like to be in front of the camera? And you know, thankfully all my friends that I've asked have said yes, let's do it, you know, and just like an opportunity to like, you have a beautiful story, can we can I share your story, like, is that okay? And just like reaching out to people and finding a way to honor their stories and their life experiences and views is just such a beautiful thing for me. And I hope to, because as I continue to grow, as we continue to grow, because each do it in a bigger and more amazing way, right? Okay, I have another question to ask before we round up, but can you talk about how because earlier on you mentioned code switching and you mentioned it kind of in passing, right? Having to always be like the new girl or the new person in all the like literally all the spaces you've had to inhabit, like what has like how have you been able to navigate that while holding strong to your own sense of self and your own sense of identity, and how do you feel like that relates or pours, or how do you feel like that impacts the way that you lead Village Girls?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? It's my greatest strength and my greatest weakness. Recently, I've even like had a moment in this sort of professional development accelerator filmmakers program that I've been blessed to be a part of, like just this past winter through the Realness Institute. Shout out to my Realness Institute family. And this like notion of adaptability and like performance in some ways, like it's been incredible armor. I think like it served us, and by us I mean me and my siblings, very well growing up because of all of the change that we had to deal with like on constantly. Like the notion of stillness for me is something that I like, that is not my default, right? I'm like, keep it like, I need to be in constant sort of forward motion. I refer to myself as a shark sometimes, because you know how like sharks will die if they stay still. They swim in circles. I'm not making this up.
Constantly,
they sleep in circles. They have to sleep swimming in circles because of their gills. Because if they stop, they'll drown themselves.
I did not know that. Wow.
So me too. If I stop, I will die. So. Which again served me well, like in terms of like the drive to keep on going, the drive to assimilate, the drive to code, not even the drive to code switch, but like sort of like the ability to do that, where I'm like, oh, I know how to in 5 seconds assess the space and be in a space, like in whatever space that I am thrown in, I will figure out a way to make myself comfortable and adapt to kind of the environment in a way where even if I'm wildly uncomfortable, you'll never know it, right? So I think that that has been a gift in the way that it's like creatively and even just professionally, like that gets you like to certain levels, like where having enough self-awareness of what it is that you bring to the table, like intrinsically, but as well as again, this thing of like the concept of blackness and recognizing people's like assumptions and perceptions of you. So you're like, okay, how do I need to like navigate this to the best of my ability and present in a way that is going to, or code switch into a way that is going to like put them at ease, all of this stuff. So like, it's a strength, right? Like in some ways it's like, this is a positive thing. And then, trying to hold on to like a true sense of self, that part, that honestly is the tricky part, and that's honestly like the work being done now in adulthood, in my 30s, in my dirty 30s, that I'm having to sort of undo or kind of like find and hold on to in the way where it's just like, okay, Misha, you know that like within this industry and as your star continues to rise or whatever that means, as you gain more visibility or invisibility, what does it mean to like be able to touch back to like your true self? So that's honestly been like recently something that has been called, I mentioned the Realness Institute, like has been called to my attention in a very real and tangible way where it's just like your ability to adapt is amazing. Like I had my mentor, Marette Medadefro, shout out to her, say, your ability for self-restraint is remarkable. And here I am being like, thank you. And she's like, no, that's not a good thing. Or like, it's not so much that it's not a good thing, but she's like, girl, you need to be like, who are you? You know what I mean? And I'm like, right. She's right. Just like, when the cameras are off or when you don't need to be making a speech or presenting a thing or pitching an idea to get a movie made or writing a story, you can come back to yourself and sort of be that thing. So I'm honestly like right now on that journey in a pretty real and tangible way, mm-hmm. like where it's just like all of the different parts of me, what are the things that I do want to keep to myself and feel like they really align with my soul? Mm-hmm. And what are the things that like are incredible uses and benefits to like get me forward and progressing professionally in some ways. But it's just like we all know that professional life is not all life, right? Like it's like, yeah, what you do is not the end all, and because at the end of the day your grandkids don't care.
Yeah. Like, no, for real though, like, yeah, what you do is not who you are. And because, exactly, it's so different as an artist, because like How do you define yourself as an, like, what do you do? I am an artist.
Yeah, literally.
Versus a doctor will never say I mean.
Yes, but they're like.
Like, they practice medicine. It's kind of different. Yes. Right? Because, like, there's something about artists and just taking on being an artist as, mm-hmm, an identity versus as a practice.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
100%. And in some ways, I think maybe it's maybe this, some of the magic or answer, it lies in the reframing of even just how we talk about ourselves, and that, mm-hmm, it's just like, oh yeah, I practice art. Like, mm-hmm, yeah, instead of I am an artist, which in some ways it's like, yes, you are that too. Like, I don't necessarily want to lose that as part of my identity.
Yeah.
But I did, but you know what I really love to do as well is like, like the majority of my friends are artists, but then I've made sure to keep friends that are like in real life and like, yeah. And not that my artist friends aren't, but it's just like, you know, artists, we're crazy people, and we will stay in the land of Lulu and make believe, like, even hanging out. It's just like,
yeah,
you know, I mean, even our conversations where it's just like, I can spend hours, like I can spend like 4 hours straight talking about the most abstract concepts with, yeah, artist friends. And it's, yeah, fun for everyone.
Yeah.
I dated a guy, I'm not going to name any names, but I dated a guy who was very concrete in his worldview, and he was creative, but he's not necessarily, he does not have an artistic mind necessarily. Right. And having conversations with him, I can say now, was like kind of insufferable because we couldn't talk about abstract things for a long enough time to make me satisfied, right? Like, so. Right. But then again, like, it's good to have people that like think concretely and like live completely different lives. Yeah. You know, I have one of my best friends is a nurse and she's very creative, but, mm-hmm, she is a nurse and she's good. She's like nursing till I die. Like, yeah, you know, like nursing for life, gang. And it's so amazing to have someone like that because she is someone in my life. Shout out to you, Kayla, who really grounds me in the way where she's like, okay, abstract is amazing, but like, how are you? Have you had, yeah, have you bought groceries today? Yeah.
You know, I agree with that. And I've had this conversation with a friend of mine where for me, that connection is some sort of day job, some sort of volunteering, mm-hmm, some sort of some sort of thing where I'm not around artists.
Yeah.
And I could just have everyday conversations with everyday people. Because as much as I'm like, I'm an artist, and there's a pizzazz or whatever that comes with that, right? I'm an everyday person. Like, I'm a human being as well.
You're also a human being.
Yeah, and you know, those ordinary conversations about food or, you know, not small talk particularly, but just conversations that don't necessarily start and end in Lululand, as you call
you
it.
You know right? What I mean? Like, well, today,
yeah.
So, I've been at the tree, and like, I asked myself, like, you know, like, what about the tree?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I find that, like, even just whether it's, you know, through work or through volunteering or just going to church, like whatever, right? Just being around people who are just like, hey, you know, I was at work and my boss is an asshole, and I'm like, oh, y'all have bosses, how is that, you know? And just like kind of peeking into other folks, like other people's lives and how they live, and and I think that also helps me a lot with writing and imagining or creating scenes and creating scenarios, because I have some sort of bearing to, like, That seems like a realistic thing and not something made up, you know?
Totally. Because there is this danger. And I mean, I love, honestly, like, artists are my favorite people.
Yeah, same. I think
we really are magicians in the way that it's like the capacity for an artist to create something out of nothing, mm-hmm. to infuse like wonder and curiosity in everyday stuff, in the most mundane, like that's amazing. And I love and appreciate the way that our minds work. And then also it's like, yeah, just the danger of like also living too much in the abstract or too much in the metaphor, too much in the make believe. Cause I mean, listen, we know how it's like, it affects real life, like relationships. And I don't even just mean like romantically, but just everywhere. It's like, if you're doing Lulu too much, like you're not able to function as like a.
It's not always the Solulu.
Exactly. So yeah, shout out to our solid concrete friends.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, no, this has been so awesome, Misha. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing so much about your story. Before we leave, can you just leave us with a word of advice, a word of wisdom, a sprinkle of knowledge, you know, an African proverb, something, a philosophy heck, like just leave us with something.
Okay. You know, I'm long-winded, but I will first say, so the African proverb, which is also very much like birthed out of the philosophy of Ubuntu, is if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And yeah, this is something that I'm just constantly reminding myself of daily, very much in this like season of my life, is that we are so much better together. We are going to get further, like even within like business and creativity. Like, I am so in my season of collaboration and examining and interrogating what that actually means to me and how to implement that without ego, without like, not that they're, because togetherness, there's obviously going to be conflict because people are different and they have different opinions and stuff, but just sort of this thing of like, what does going together, moving forward together, actually look like? How to implement that as an artist, as a professional, as just like a human being. Like, yeah, what does togetherness look like? And like asking myself, like, is it about the rate of success or is it about like the longevity of that success? And that's the advice. That's the word of wisdom, is like continue to like examine what togetherness means to you and try to go for that. Because I think like at the end of the day, we are all we have.
Yeah.
You know? 100%. This life is beautiful because of other people in it,
thank you for that. Like, I love collaborating. I like when I step into a room, even as a director, like one of the first things I say is I know I'm the director, but I don't know this all. I mean, like, I'm always open to like learning from people and because I just feel like everyone just has a magic and everyone just has beauty that they contribute and that they carry. And sometimes just being able to witness that is everything to me. Mm. And so I like, yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. And with conflict too, like people talk a lot about creating a safe space. Mm. And I think that sometimes the work itself is not necessarily safe. So it's more about bravery. It's more about creating a brave space where we can show up 100%. Oh girl, you're snapping for me. Sure. Heck yeah.
Now the podcast has just arrived. Sometimes it's not about safety, it's about bravery. Come on. Yeah. What? That's a word. I just got chills.
Yeah. And I've been learning and navigating that for myself, and even in different rooms as a collaborator where I find myself. And you know, some rooms are more conducive for that than others. Mm-hmm. But regardless, it's still something that I'm trying to navigate to and figure out for sure.
Woof. Oof, I need a journal about that. I'm still shook. That's so profound.
Yeah.
I love that. Why do we have to go? We are just starting to teach the masterclass to the people. Wow.
Oh my days. Thank you again, Misha. This was beautiful. Like, thank you so much. This was awesome. It's always such a joy talking to you and learning from you and hearing your story and having you share. Like, it's just I appreciate your perspective on work, on life, on people, and you know, yeah, thank you again for making the time and meeting us here at the podcast.
Thank you. I mean, you are the one creating the spaces to continue to like shine spotlights on other people, so thank you for having me. This was just a joy, and that last little nugget, wow, hallelujah,
hallelujah.
Mashallah, yes. Wow.
So just tell the people where they can find you on social media, your website, like stuff like that.
Oh, yes, of course. Where people can find me on the gram, though, allegedly. Well, we'll talk about that. I mean, okay. So Village Girls specifically, where you can find Village Girls, www.villagegirls.ca. There's like links for past projects and current projects and upcoming projects on there. And then on Instagram and on our socials at Village Girls LTD, at Village Girls Limited, you can follow us there and sort of like keep up with all of my projects. And then I have my own personal social media at Misha Maseka, MISHA MASEKA. And you can follow me there. Right now I'm kind of like doing a little mysterious girl thing, like it's, which is funny because like personality wise, obviously anyone who knows me in real life, I'm not a mysterious girl. I will tell you everything. If in real life, I'll tell you, I'm an oversharer, but on socials, I've taken a bit of a break. I'm being mysterious. I'm heeding to Michaela Cole's advice when she won, I think, the Emmy or Golden Globe about like, sometimes as creatives being invisible is okay, and maybe go and meet that invisibility because that's probably where your next great idea and creation lies. So mm-hmm. I think I'm a bit in that season of invisibility, but the social is there and you can create the highlight reel and the reels and stuff. Yeah. By all means, no, I'm giving them permission to go and like talk. Yeah. Yeah. But Village Girls, you can keep up with like projects and stuff.
About your music?
Are
you forgetting? Look at this.
Hello. So I also allegedly sometimes
moonlight. Allegedly? Would you stop?
Under the alias Lemba, LEMBA. And connected to my first short film, Not That Deep, is also my EP called Not That Deep, which is a mix of poetry and sort of like folk pop, jazz, funk music. So that's fun. And you can find that anywhere you stream music. And actually, I do have a project, like an audio project. So it's music, but it's also poetry that's in the pipeline for the fall. So look out for that.
Awesome. What would it be called? Do you have a name?
It is called Sorrows and Prayers.
Sorrows and Prayers.
Sorrows and Prayers. Because we are in our fat girl era yet again. And you know what? I was actually, I know this is, we're going over at this point, but yes. This is, it was kind of inspired, if anyone watched Queen Charlotte on Netflix.
Yes, yes.
The hilarity, like in the first episode, and then it was sort of like a motif throughout the whole thing, when like the older Queen Charlotte, one of her kids' spouses dies, right? And like ironically, she's like, sorrows, prayers. And I just thought that was so funny and hilarious. Yeah. But then also just this notion of like, yeah, just the notion of like sorrows and prayers, or a wish or a plea of like, when you are feeling sorrow or feeling grief or feeling depressed, like the prayer, the wish, the plea of getting out of that space. Like, so that's kind of what this poetry is like based around. So like, yes, inspired by Queen Charlotte, but then also like on a real thing.
yeah. It just starts from there, and then you start thinking deeper, and it's like,
yeah.
Oh, you know, it just takes up form and flesh and body.
Yeah.
Once again, thank you so much, Misha. Looking forward to that project, Sorrows and Prayers, in the fall. Thank you again for, you know, joining us on the podcast today. And for our listeners, thank you so much for staying with us, and we'll see you next time. See you, bye. Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Afros in the Diaspora. I hope this episode left you feeling inspired and hopeful. To engage, feel free to like, follow, share, and subscribe to Afros in the Diaspora on all social media and podcast platforms. Remember to leave a review and a rating. If you would like to be a guest, please reach out. Send an email to hi@afrosinthediaspora.com. That is hi@afrosinthediaspora.com. Or send us a DM on Instagram @afrosinthediaspora. Remember, there is beauty in our stories and power in our voices. Together, we are stronger. Until next time.